I hope you're all feeling well, and hope you're feeling rested, your body's well. I know that sometimes the first night of a retreat is you're getting used to a new place, and so if you do feel that your body is tired, you can take some time to rest today, and like during the unscheduled times, like perhaps after lunch, you might want to take a rest if you're tired. And if your energy is good, then walk and enjoy this. It's supposed to be a beautiful day. So last night I began giving some instruction in meditation, talking about the practice of samatha, tranquility meditation. So I'm going to review that a little bit and then talk about vipassana meditation. So these meditations are on a spectrum, and there are other forms as well as vipassana, but we're really going to be focusing on those two practices. And it's not like they're two different practices, but they're kind of they evolve, and I hope you'll understand that after I give some more instruction. So what I said last night about samatha is that our minds habitually are very driven. Driven by forces of anxiety and wanting, and of course our minds are also, there are other principles that are present in our minds. We have other intentions. We might have very positive intentions to do some beneficial work, to love, to be kind and generous. And those also organize our activities and our behaviors. So, and I think that it's safe to say that you probably wouldn't be here unless there was some really a lot of very positive and beneficial intentions and organizing principles in your minds to become more free, to become more kind, and so on in your lives, and non-reactive. So we don't tend to, we will talk about cultivating, what's beneficial and loving and kind within our being, as well as looking at what's creating suffering. But the focus of the teaching that the Buddha gave was, to look at our suffering and to recognize that we can become free of it. Which is actually a pretty positive message. But we do begin by talking a lot about, what is causing the suffering, and what are those habits of mind that create reactivity and all kinds of thing causing us to say and do things in our lives that just perpetuate conflict and unhappiness for ourselves and others. So when we're practiced, to go back to samatha practice, when we sit down, and so the instruction is, feel the breath. Just feel the breath, and then we discover that, well, it's in principle, the idea is simple, but it's not an easy practice. So simple, but not easy, as they say. And why is it not easy? Because the mind is driven. Because it's not, we may say, well, I'm, you know, have this intention, so I'm going to really focus my attention on just being present, like coming to the present moment and feeling my breath. And then, you know, a moment later, the mind is off somewhere. So, this practice of just coming home and resting in the meditation object of the breath, or as I mentioned last night, it could also be just feeling the body, hearing sound. But choosing a simple meditation object, a single meditation object to come home to. It's your resting place. It helps us to develop the very skillful habit of letting go. Another word for letting go is renunciation. Sometimes the word renunciation sounds, you know, like it's something absolute, that, you know, monks and nuns are called renunciates because they have given up the way of life of, you know, the layperson living in the world, and they're living a very kind of focused practice of dedicating themselves full time to practice, to meditation and Dharma practice. But actually, even for monks and nuns, you know, renunciation is done in each moment. It's just a letting go. It's not something that, you know, I mean, they may make a large intention to live in a certain lifestyle, but it's actually in each moment, just as it is for anyone who's practicing this practice. It's letting go of the drama that is happening in the mind, letting go of the stories that we tell ourselves, about others, and coming to be present in this moment of our experience. So whatever this moment may be, a moment of breath, a moment of feeling ourselves sitting in the chair, a moment of feeling judgmental, a moment of feeling not sure, uncertain. But, you know, as I was saying, for the samatha practice, we're coming back to a particular object, coming back to the breath. Or another object, if you're choosing another object. But I'll just talk about the breath. So we're cultivating that very skillful ability to recognize that whatever's happening in our minds are thoughts. And we may not have, you know, originated, like we didn't necessarily think, well, right now I'm going to think about, you know, the problems I'm having at work, or the, you know, the conflicts that I'm having with my kids, or, you know, whoever. These things pop into our minds, right? We're not necessarily summoning them forth. But then there's a certain energy that we give it by continuing to give our attention to it. And so we can make that skillful choice to redirect that energy of attention to something that's just neutral and present in the present moment. So last night I said it becomes our home base. It becomes a place of rest, a place of ease. So it's a place to just find, to collect ourselves, to collect the attention, and just be in the present moment with the breath. And so in the beginning of our samatha practice, we're kind of just aiming our attention at the breath. So there's a thought, there's a drama, there's a planning, mind, remembering something, fantasy, a recognition, and then it takes commitment, right? It takes commitment to say, right now I'm going to come back to the breath. So there's that kind of overriding commitment that supports the practice. And then we feel the breath. So when we're practicing with the breath or the body, it's not just that we're thinking about the breath or imaging the breath. It's very tactile. It's feeling the breath. So in the belly, in the chest area, or in the nostrils, feeling the breath. And so, we start by just kind of aiming our attention at the breath. So there's a real focus on removing attention from whatever we're lost in, caught up in, gotten hooked by, and then replacing it the breath. And then we learn that there's also a sustaining of our attention on the whole breath. The whole, in the text, it's called the whole body of the breath, the whole breath body. And that's the whole duration of the breath. So feeling, not just connecting with the breath with our attention, but feeling the breath, the beginning of the breath, the middle of the breath, and the end of the breath. So I'd like you to just take a minute now and for one breath, just feel the whole in-breath and then the pause at the in-breath, the whole out-breath, and the pause at the out-breath. But just sustaining your attention along that whole process. And another. Now, you don't need to compare one breath to another, but there are differences in each breath. There's different textures. One breath might be a little deeper, a little longer, a little shorter. So each breath is different. As our capacity to be with the breath, to rest with the mind with the breath, to allow, as the mind kind of settles into this practice, you may experience a sense of just your attention, your awareness, kind of sinking into the breath. It's almost like a sponge. It's saturated with water. And so your attention kind of, it's not only resting on the surface of the breath, but it's kind of sinking into the breath. So that's something that may evolve as you do the practice. And there's quite a lovely experience as the mind, it's a development of the mind. So this is, this is a practice that's a development of the mind. the development of the mind's capacity to stay with the object of meditation. So we all have the capacity to concentrate. And this kind of meditation is sometimes called concentration meditation. But I prefer it, really samatha means tranquility, and it's more the sense of resting. But there is a factor of concentration in this, and we all have the capacity to concentrate. The difference between just meditation and concentration, the Buddha used an example of, you know, a thief, you know, who's kind of trying to pick a lock to steal something. Well, the motivation for the concentration is very unskillful, right? It's very harmful. It's greed. It's, you know, it's harming the other person by taking something that doesn't belong to him or her. I've noticed how my mind can really get concentrated when there's an object of desire, you know, that, you know, oh, I want something. I decide, oh, I need something. You know, I use the word need, but it's really want, right? So, I noticed this, I got married, 16 years ago, and I noticed at some point how focused my mind was around, you know, all the things that, you know, I wanted to get and I wanted to make happen, and, you know, so I said, wow, my mind is really concentrated on all of these things that I want, you know. But it was a kind of driven, you know, the mind was very focused. It was very driven. Well, that's a different kind of concentration than the capacity to be steady and stable and present in the moment on just a simple object like the breath, you know, because the breath is a neutral object. As I said last night, you know, we're not going to get all excited about, I can't wait till this next breath. It's really going to be a good one. So this is a neutral object. And the beauty of this is that it simply brings us into presence, because we are attentive and feeling the breath. And there's this quality. We're not getting drawn into, you know, greed or aversion or resistance around it. It's just, it brings us into presence. There's a beautiful image that a teacher named Ajahn Chah used to describe this quality of settling. And this will kind of help us to move into a little discussion about the next phase of meditation, how samatha moves into vipassana. He talked about sitting at a still forest pond and just being very quiet. And that's the image of the samatha practice, just the stillness, the stability, the quietness. The mind, you know, begins to collect. It's not so, you know, helter-skelter, monkey mind, grabbing this, that. Even if it's, and it's, you know, as I say, this is a development of the mind, so it doesn't necessarily happen just like that. But we might have a couple of breaths where we, just the mind kind of rests. And even if, you know, there are some thoughts, we're not getting hooked by them. You know, we're saying, oh, there's a thought, you know, a cloud floating by, thought. And there's a kind of a steadiness and stability with the breath. So going back to the pond, Ajahn Chah said that, you know, as we sit very quiet, very still, some of the animals begin to come out of the woods because they don't feel threatened by our presence. So quiet animals. You might have a deer, you might have a rabbit. They come and drink at the pond. Some of the more fierce animals might come as well. The lions and the tigers, and then maybe some really kind of mysterious animals that you've never seen before, like a dragon or a unicorn, some kind of magical creatures that you've never seen before. And so the connection to this is, as our mind becomes a bit more quiet, things that we've been running away from in our lives may come up. So I mentioned last night about how a retreat is not an escape. We carry within our minds, our bodies, we carry our lives. And so... it's not unusual for, you know, a grief to come up, or, you know, a sadness, or an old wound, and that can happen in our meditation as the mind becomes quiet, as we are letting go in coming here on retreat. We're letting go of all our habits of distracting ourselves, and, you know, the drivenness of our lives, you know, always going here and there and always busy, just settling, being quiet. We're listening, we're bringing an attitude of listening. And that's really an act of kindness for ourselves, to bring this quality of listening to, well, what am I carrying? You know, what's here? What's in my heart? What am I carrying in my body? And it also could be, you know, a lot of gratitude can come up. That also happens. Like, you know, wow, I have so many blessings in my life. I'm so fortunate. And I haven't really been appreciating how full and rich my life is. So these things also can come up. And so in Vipassana practice, when the mind has the stability to stay with a meditation object, in Vipassana practice, if something comes up for us, it could be a present moment experience, like a sensation. Maybe there's some soreness in the knee, and so you're feeling that with some intensity, and it's bringing your attention away from the breath, and so you may turn toward that sensation in the knee and see, and just bring this quality of mindfulness to it. So, mindfulness, present moment awareness, not judging, not resisting, not wanting to fix it or change it. So that's quality of mindfulness, just awareness, openness, and as we bring mindfulness to, say, the soreness in the knee, you know, we actually move right into it with our awareness, and we see Well, it's not something solid. It's not just soreness. It's a whole cluster of sensations moving and changing. So maybe there's a kind of a tenderness inside, and maybe there's a bit of sharp sensation somewhere, and now it's shifted, and maybe it feels a bit of throbbing or warmth. So as we bring this quality of mindful investigation to a simple experience like feeling the soreness in a knee, we can recognize that it's actually a process. And so that's the that's sort of where we move to with Vipassana practice, that we begin to recognize that our experiences are really processes. They're not solid things. They arise on their own, and they move through us. Just like a little crowd of kids moving through our experience. Here they come, there they go. And so we can bring this quality of exploration, mindful investigation, mindful exploration, to anything that kind of hooks our attention. So the foundation is to develop the stability of mind, to stay with an experience long enough to bring this mindful investigation to it and see its nature, see into its nature. And then the exploration is when we are pulled from that practice of just the mind being steady and stable, and of course that's, as I said, it's something that develops. It might just be one breath, two breaths, and then the mind gets hooked. So come back and rest. And then we begin when we have developed that capacity to a certain extent, so that, you know, we do have a few breaths, a minute, 2 minutes of steadiness, of, you know, just the mind resting in the breath. And then we may actually begin our process of investigating, well, what is this pulling my attention away? So say, to move into a bit more complex example than just a sore knee, maybe a memory comes up. You know, maybe something happened at work or in your family, and you're carrying it as a kind of a hurt or an anger or a loss. And so in our practice, especially in this embodied practice that we're doing here, in this retreat, focusing on mindfulness in the body. And I teach this as an approach all the time. It's not just on a mindfulness in the body retreat. Taking our attention from the story that's going around and round our head about she said this and he did that, and next time I'm going to do that, and all of the story, the drama, you know, the sense of feeling, you know, overlooked or uncared for, are all of these sticky things that we feel, and we all feel this. So, you know, it's so human to get into these kinds of, you know, web, get caught up in this web of self. It's a way that we create a sense of ourselves, a self that's either not good enough or doesn't fit in or isn't wanted. And so rather than getting just going on and on and on in the story, which is never ending, we can problem solve forever. We bring our investigation to the body. And so we can ask ourselves, where do I feel this in the body? This whole story about, you know, what she did or what he didn't do or, you know, or what I did or what I'm not good enough at. This whole story, where am I holding this in the body? How am I feeling this in the body? So it may be as a contraction in the heart. It may be as a feeling in the jaw. There's this woman in my sitting group that I have in Montreal, and she made a very simple observation after the sitting recently, and she said, you know, I notice that when I notice that my mind is going off in some, you know, kind of on some tangent, getting, you know, pulled off, and then I feel my jaw is clenched. I thought, that's a great observation. It's really great. So then we may notice just in our sitting that our jaw is clenched. We might notice it in the body first. We might notice it in our daily life. Our jaw is clenched. And then our body can, you know, kind of point to the mind. So, but to work with it in the body is just to investigate. So there's this clenching of the jaw. There's this contraction of the heart. And what happens when I bring mindful awareness to it? So what usually happens when we bring mindful awareness to it, because mindfulness is not caught up in a story, it's not trying to fix anything, it's not trying to grasp anything, it's not trying to push anything away. It has this quality of openness and acceptance of what is. It's just, we find that there's a bit of a release, perhaps. It may not be complete release, but it's just a bit of a release, and that we can be with it. Whatever that feeling is, you know, whether it's sadness or hurt or resentment, that we can be with it in the body. And so the body, and I'm going to talk more about this afternoon, the body can be our place in which we are experiencing all of the flow, the mental states, the sense of being caught, or whatever it is that's going on. The body gives us a space to be present with it, with compassion, acceptance, and to see, you know, that it's not something that's permanent. It's not something solid. Because as we can just be with it and feel it in the body, we see that, yeah, just bringing that mindfulness to it, well, it opens up a little. And maybe it shifts. Maybe it, you know, maybe the sense of contraction in the chest, then I feel something else in the belly. And maybe then that moves into, kind of radiates into something that becomes more subtle. So it moves through us. We see how these mind states are embodied, and that they, when we give them the space of mindful awareness, they can move through us. So it begins with a neutral object, so say the breath, or it could be sound, or it could be the flow of sensation in the body. Learning to stabilize our attention in that present moment experience. So that skill of letting go, that learning to recognize that this drama is the story. You know, I'm feeding it with my energy by giving it attention, more and more attention, believing in it. So I'm going to just redirect, come back to the breath, rest in the breath, rest, find that quality of ease in the body, in the breath. And then as that is established to a certain extent, and you know, we're not talking about perfection, as that's established, then these creatures come out of the forest, you know. So maybe it's the fear, maybe it's the loneliness, maybe it's the sense of I'm not good enough, or anxiety about whatever we feel anxious about. And we recognize that we can be with that in the body. And that being with it in the body allows it to move. Bringing that quality of mindfulness to it. Because when we're holding onto the story and feeding the story, we're tending to hold onto it in the body. So we're grasping it in the body. So that's an important piece. You know, by giving it our attention, more and more thinking, believing the story, you know, the story of, you know, nobody wants me, I'm not good enough, or you know, whatever our story is. You know, we're at the same time we're holding it in the body. And when we can just be present with it in the body, it just invites it to open a little bit, to begin to move, to begin to shift. I'd like to just check in with you and see if there's anything that about what I've said that feels a little unclear, or you'd like to ask a question about,
The word renunciation sounds a little bit to me like rejection.
Thank you. That's a really beautiful question. So renunciation comes from compassion for ourselves, because it comes from the recognition that's suffering. You know, that's really creating suffering for myself. That's the direction of more suffering. And so I'm not going to pursue that anymore. You know, rejection, but actually we're not rejecting it, because we're turning our attention to it. So in the samatha practice, that renunciation is expressed by a letting go, you know, and coming to the breath, which is developing the mind. It's a training for the mind to develop the capacity to then begin to investigate and explore what is the nature of this suffering. So people can spend a lot of time developing their, you know, like you can, people can go very deep into the practice of, you know, just meditating on the breath or on a particular object and developing this collectedness of mind and stability of mind or concentration. Absorption is a word that's used. And so people can really go very deeply into that. The teachings are clear that although that can develop the mind, and they're very wholesome practices and very beautiful practices, they're ultimately not liberating practices in which we see through the nature of what are these habits of mind that create suffering. So it's, we're not rejecting it because the rejection, you know, would just be creating a division, a sense of, you know, kind of splitting ourselves somehow from, you know, something that's coming up, you know. So it's not, we don't want to reject, you know, grief or reject anger. You know, we want to understand the nature of it. And by understanding, you know, seeing, not understanding intellectually, but, you know, really seeing the nature of it, it shifts our relationship with it so that it doesn't have the same power. We may feel angry. We may feel jealous. We may feel, you know, grasping. And then we recognize it and we can let it move through us and see, you know, well, it's not something that I need to get hooked by. You know, it will move through me if I don't hold on to it. So it's so the renunciation is in the service of, you know, developing this capacity of mind. Yeah. Thank you for that question.
Sometimes when the, you know, a thought and we experience it in the body, it can be pretty intense and it can be fairly unpleasant. So just, do you have some kind of just ways of working with the intense, sometimes the intense feelings of anxiety or sadness or...
Yeah. We don't like unpleasant experiences, right? And we want pleasant experiences. And the drivenness of our lives comes from this, that we don't want to feel anger or anxiety. And we want to feel comfortable and at ease. So, in a way, the samatha meditation gives us a way to experience this, it's a spiritual, pleasant experience. So the Buddha talked about, you know, the difference between spiritual, he called non-worldly, and worldly feelings. And so the samatha meditation actually is, it's a beautiful, you know, quality of rest and peace and ease. And so it nourishes us and enables us, and we find the courage and compassion to learn to be present with our difficult and challenging feelings. It is unpleasant to experience grief and to feel it in the body. It's very difficult. So this, it does really call for us to be courageous. And what we discover is that we can do it. And that's really such an important discovery, to realize I actually can be with this grief. I can be with this anger. You know, I can, and feeling it, knowing it in the body, is a way in which we can know it as kind of its energetic presence in the body, and we don't get kind of lost in the whole story of it. So it might be that, you know, I about 8 years ago, I experienced the death of somebody who I was very close to, and it was totally unexpected. And I remember just, you know, just sitting and feeling my heart breaking. So my heart felt like it was breaking. You know, there was so much, you know, pain in the heart. And I couldn't, you know, I found that that's really all I could do. I mean, I was in a kind of a situational depression, or I think that's the expression. I wanted to go and work in the garden. I couldn't. I just ended up sitting on the back porch and looking at the weeds grow. Not even noticing that the weeds were growing, just feeling in my heart. And then I began to notice over time, days, weeks, that there was some spaces, like the grief wasn't always so intense. You know, like, oh, there would be little openings, little spaces that would happen. And then maybe later, you know, oh, there was some quality of peace, maybe some joy that would come. You know, I remember one of my first meditation retreats, Vipassana retreats, I was, my son had gone on a trip, and, you know, he was just like 17, and, you know, and he was supposed to get back to me before I went on retreat and check in and just reassure me he was okay. And of course, he didn't. And so I as I was going into the hall, I just stopped one of the teachers and said, I don't know if I can do this. I'm just in such a state of fear because I'm so worried. And she was so kind. And she said, just be with the fear and observe it. And notice that it's not solid, that actually, you know, there's an intensity to it, but then maybe there's some spaces. Find the spaces, notice the spaces. And we can also be present in the spaces. So so when we make that compassionate and courageous decision to be with our experience, our inner experience in the body, you know, we gain the wisdom and the equanimity that comes from wisdom to realize that we can be with that, you know, that flow of experience. So let's take, this is just 10 minutes, we'll just take 10 minutes to sit and to really cultivate, first of all, this practice of steadiness of mind.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.